This is Block by Block, a community news program from WPPMLP 106.5 FM, where we explore issues affecting the Philadelphia area with news reports from members of the community. I'm Sheila Lorette Emerson.
And I'm Autumn McCann. In the next half hour, we will hear stories from our community news reporters about what it took to open a new Filipino restaurant in Brewery Town, a community art center in Chinatown that grew out of activism against the proposed Sixers Arena, and how a new space is bringing local artists together in Washington West.
But first, the future of the Cecil B. Moore Library in North Philadelphia is uncertain. The aging library has been shut down repeatedly due to structural issues, and the city has planned renovations, but they were put on hold after council member Jeffrey Young offered a new proposal: tear down the building and construct a new library. At a recent town hall, community members weighed in. Block by Block reporter Crystal Herrera spoke with some of them to learn about their concerns.
The doors of the Cecil B. Moore Library are shut and could remain that way indefinitely. The closure has left many in the community frustrated, including the people who work there.
The library's closure has been really hard on us as staff members.
That's Kate Goodman, the children's librarian at Cecil B. Moore.
We've worked really hard over the last several years to build a really cohesive culture. We've been separated and moved to different libraries across the system. So it's hard for us going to work every day in a place we're not as familiar with, but it's also hard being away from library patrons when we know how important our services are to them.
This isn't the first time this has happened. The library has shut down before due to HVAC failures, and that cuts off access to after-school programs, Wi-Fi, computers, and job services. A full rebuild could mean losing these resources for years.
What's at stake for the neighborhood is having almost no public open spaces to be able to go to. You know, we know they're not going to be able to get those services elsewhere. And I think it's really common to hear, you know, if one library is closed, you can go up to the next library. But our patrons are children, a lot of them are elderly and disabled. And they're from right around the few blocks where the library is, so they can't go to another library.
Residents have advocated for funding to keep the library operational. In 2017, the city committed an initial $2 million for repairs and accessibility upgrades. Since then, additional funding secured through public and private sources has increased the budget to $10.2 million. Construction was set to begin this summer, but City Council member Jeffrey Young Jr. put those plans on hold when he floated the idea to demolish the library and rebuild a new facility with housing units on top. At a town hall meeting last month, community members packed the sanctuary of Wayland Temple Baptist Church, demanding answers. And when the idea of demolishing the library was brought up, the response was immediate.
And what we can do is build a modern library with affordable housing that will aid life and help the community. And I hear that, right? That's what the community is expressing. I don't believe we have enough housing.
It was a contentious meeting. Councilmember Young defended the plan, saying the community deserves a state-of-the-art library and that the housing units would offer affordable options. But many residents feared it would do more harm than good.
My name is Nefertiti Rayner. This community means a lot to me. I grew up here in other places in North Philadelphia. I feel like developing housing is a bad idea on top of the library. It prolongs our children not having a safe place to go. It prolongs our adults finding literacy. The library allows for us to do research, to do homework. We don't have Wi-Fi in certain places, jobs, all types of things.
For residents like Mecca, the stakes are too high to risk losing the library for years.
I think the library on Lehigh is a perfect example of how you can renovate without demolishing or displacing a community for 4 or 5 years. And if you look at the homicide rates or the imprisonment rates in the city, especially in North Philly, our kids don't have 4 to 5 years. They need after-school programs. They need access to a free and public safe space like the library.
A survey by the Brewery Town Sharswood Neighborhood Coalition found that 77% of respondents support moving forward with renovations. Only about 2% approved demolition. Safety concerns were a central issue for many attendees, including Dr. Mary Wade, an associate minister at Wayland Temple and a longtime resident of the North Philadelphia neighborhood. She believes a library should be a sanctuary.
It makes no sense to build housing over a library. It's dangerous. It's not productive to either the children or to the residents. It's dangerous to have kids around in housing areas, you know, right, coming for safety to a place where there are people who we don't even know living overhead.
Some libraries in the city do have residential housing above. One of those is the Queen Memorial Library in South Philadelphia. Liz Gardner was a supervisor there for 6 years, and she says things can get complicated when you're trying to maintain a mix of public and private spaces.
I want to let you all know that I experience lots of issues with, number one, leaks, number two, fires, number three, pest issues, and number four, unfortunately, it impacted the library's operations to have residences up top when the interests of the residents and the interests of the library were in conflict. If you love libraries so much, they deserve their own space to do the best library.
Some people wondered if the development proposal was really in the best interest of the community. Would the housing units truly be affordable, or would they lead to rent hikes and displace longtime residents? For Melvin Harrison, this debate is part of a much larger issue, one where working class communities are routinely left out of major development decisions.
How many leaders of this community were approached about this project? All these types of things get done without the consent of the people. This is just another attempt by developers to strip a working class neighborhood of resources that are valuably needed here. The city thrives by its people, not by development, not by capitalism, not by oppression, but the people is what make the city thrive best.
Many residents left the town hall feeling unsure if the council member would follow through on the community's wishes. For now, the library remains temporarily open. But for how long? The HVAC system is still not working, and while four small heating units have been installed, they offer only a temporary fix. The council member's office has yet to announce any next steps, and if the HVAC system isn't repaired before the summer heat arrives, the library could be forced to close once again. Still, the message from the community is clear. The fight isn't over, and residents are pushing forward to ensure repairs happen, and that their library stays open for good.
And respect the fact that the community has a right to decide how that project should proceed.
For Block by Block, this is Crystal.
Ginger Arts Center is a youth-led arts organization and community center in Chinatown that provides free monthly programming for high school students and other young people. There's also a library, school supplies, and other resources that make it a place to hang out. But Ginger Arts Center is also a center of political organizing. It was founded last year by some of the leaders of the student group that had been organizing young people to protest the construction of the Sixers Arena near Chinatown. Block by Block, reporter Sultan Smully spoke with two of the co-founders of Ginger Arts.
My name is Kaya Chow. I am co-founder of the Ginger Arts Center, also of SPOC, Students for the Preservation of Chinatown.
I'm Maria Gutierrez. I'm general manager here at Ginger Arts Center. And I helped found SASA, Students Against Sixers Arena.
What inspired the creation of Ginger Arts Center?
We wanted to mobilize students against the 76ers Arena. And we started to realize that, like, while it's important to fight things that you don't want in your community, it's like equally as important to think of ways that you can nourish and sustain your community. Just because we beat the arena doesn't mean that issues of disinvestment in youth, gentrification, displacement don't exist.
Do you get the sense that this fight against the arena has made political topics, broadly speaking, more salient with youth? Or do you think that that's been more focused on Chinatown specifically?
I think a lot of youth have gotten involved in anti-displacement fights in general now because don't happen in anyone's backyard. At least for SASA, also, that was one of our goals, that we unite youth from all over. And I think Ginger Arts really empowered us. We felt ownership over it, and like having youth from all over congregate and talk about the different struggles in their neighborhoods and their schools, and realize either we're all more alike than we thought, or some of us had more than we thought we did. building community with different youth from around the city was really important.
Ginger Arts Center holds several events every month, everything from photography and painting workshops to dumpling making with a civic educational twist. And so I'm wondering, how do you guys see these events as an extension of your activism?
I found that political education for high schoolers and younger is not directly teaching them theory, giving them readings and teaching them about politics in general. But I think it's just engaging them within their community and empower them to feel confident enough to speak up when something bad's happening. Spaces like Ginger Arts really allows youth to do that because it makes them feel invested in. And I think it was really cool while we were building the space, watching youth be a part of doing the renovations. They were there painting the walls, spackling, doing all the work of just getting this space open. I think there are very, very few places where youth actually feel welcomed and invested in. And there are very few places that youth feel like they actually own. When youth feel invested in and involved in their community, that's sort of the necessary foundation to empower them.
The fight against the arena in Chinatown may be over, but the Sixers still own property in the area. And what happens to the community benefits agreement is still an open question. So given this, what does Ginger Arts see as its role in continuing this fight, if anything at all?
I think our role of just being the sort of support for organizers will still continue because we have no idea if we're going to have to fight again. Also, we're thinking a lot about seeing if the 76ers can produce a actually good community benefits agreement. And I think that goes hand in hand with thinking long term about what development looks like. A lot of pro arena people and the Sixers were pushing the arena as the thing that we needed to revitalize the area. But Chinatown has historically benefited not from corporate development, but from community-led development. So that's how we got things like Folk Arts Cultural Treasures Charter School, Asian Arts Initiative, the Chinese Christian Church. All of those things sit in the footprint of what would have been the baseball stadium in 2000. And those are all things that actually benefit the community and that were built by the community because the community saw a need for it.
What does Ginger Arts have planned for the future?
More ping pong tournaments and karaoke nights. Karaoke nights are really important for me as the resident Filipino, but staying open.
And how can people make sure that Ginger Arts stays open?
You can check out our website, gingerartscenter.org. We have a whole support us.
We're always looking for volunteers. We're completely volunteer run. Come to Ginger Arts. Come hang out. We're open Tuesday through Friday, 3 to 6, and then Saturday, Sunday, 10 to 6.
Philadelphia has become an award-winning dining destination. But while the city has many highly acclaimed restaurants, opening a new one is still incredibly difficult, especially for someone opening their first restaurant. We don't often hear about all the struggles that go on behind the scenes before our favorite chefs open their doors. Block by Block's Alicia Miranda recently spoke with Raquel Dang to learn about all the work that went into opening her first all-day cafe. Dang is chef and owner of Baby's Cucina and Market in Brewery Town.
It's early Thursday afternoon and Baby's Cucina and Market is buzzing. Folks walk in from Germantown Avenue for matcha coconut lattes and crispy lechon Zig Zag garlic rice bowls. Baby's Cucina is the first full-service Filipino-American restaurant in Brewery Town, which Dang and her husband have called home since 2018. Baby's Cucina is a part of a growing business corridor filled with businesses owned by women and people of color. Baby's Cucina also joins a small but growing Filipino-American restaurant community in Philly that ranges from humble street food menus to finer dining and sit-down experiences. Filipinos represent less than 1% of Philadelphia's population, and Dang wanted to create a space to share her culture.
Filipino cuisine to me means storytelling. It means capturing history of the Filipino people. Me being able to open a restaurant that represents Filipino cuisine is very important, especially because it's so underrepresented.
Many cafe guests have been customers since before Babies even opened. Dang first began her food business with her husband hosting supper club dinners on the weekends from her house under the name Tita Emmy. Then she expanded with pop-ups under the Baby's name at places like Cherry Street Pier, where customers would line up for hours just to get a taste of Baby's Cucina donuts and pork skewers. The early success of Tita Emmy and Baby's pop-ups jump-started Dang's desire to open her own Filipino restaurant.
We are a casual counter service cafe restaurant market. So it's kind of a hybrid space. You can come in for a coffee and one of our house-made pastries, or you can come in and sit down, have lunch and study or work as well. And then you can come in for dinner, bring a bottle of wine and enjoy a really nice meal with your friends in the evening. We'll be reintroducing prefix seated dinners, which is more of a callback to the supper clubs that we did a couple years ago.
Dang saw the opportunity within a niche market to introduce Filipino cuisine to a neighborhood that wasn't primarily Filipino nor Asian, just like Tabachoy did in the Italian market and Tambayan in Reading Terminal Market. In early 2022, she quit her full-time job in pharma to travel around the Philippines for a month, cooking, exploring, and visiting family. That trip solidified her decision to take a risk and go all in on the Baby's Cucina restaurant concept. Dang says she fundraised with help from her family, sought out other funding strategies, and accessed resources from local organizations like the Fairmount Community Development Corporation and others, which were helpful during the early stages of business development.
Some of the organizations that we reached out to were the Business Development Corporation at Temple. They're a free resource for small business owners. They helped a lot in the early stages. Through them, we were able to get a grant through the city called an in-store improvement grant. That was a very long process, but did help us a lot with initial funding.
In September of 2022, Dang and her husband purchased a bi-level building at 2816 West Girard Avenue. But it would take nearly 3 years of financial hurdles, construction fits and starts, government bureaucracy, plus resolution of licenses and inspection issues to officially open the restaurant. One caveat Dang learned is the delay in receiving funds from their in-store forgivable loan program to purchase equipment and make improvements for the building.
We did not receive our first disbursement of funds until 11 months later. It's a grant that works as a reimbursement. You're not able to actually buy anything until you're approved, and that essentially stalls parts of your project. So that became very difficult. I think construction was one of our biggest delays, miscommunication with contractors, difficulty communicating with city agencies, and unclarity with what is being asked of us or what is needed. And despite reaching out to several different people within the city, it continued to be a problem. Mayor Parker had created this action team, essentially would help small business owners communicate and interact with different government departments, one of the biggest ones being L&I. And so when we were going through a lot of delays with hearing back answers, we would work through this action team. But there were still times where they had difficulty communicating with other departments, even on our behalf.
Dang worked with multiple contractors plus several health and license inspectors throughout the building updates, but none seemed to agree on the work required to get the restaurant approved for opening.
There was a ton of work done in the building, structurally, mechanical, electrical. And so if one part of the project gets delayed, it's a domino effect. When it was the initial inspection, the inspector didn't like how it was done. And so we had to redo the design phase with our architect, resubmit for approval, and then do it differently, even though it was already approved the first way. Unfortunately, the contractor left our project before finishing the project. So what went from what should have been a 6-month project for construction ended up being a year and a half.
And since the restaurant wasn't open or making money and they were quickly running out of cash, Dang and her husband used their savings to keep it going, including paying their staff. To make ends meet, they operated as a commissary kitchen, did corporate catering, and hosted off-site events. In February, Baby's Cucina finally opened its doors. Dang says she's learned a lot about what it takes to bootstrap a restaurant opening and wants to share tips with other aspiring first-time restaurant operators. She emphasizes the importance of planning, budgeting, and building a supportive team.
The first thing I learned is you can plan everything to the T, but there will always be something that goes wrong. always account for at least 30% more than what you're thinking, and even that is conservative. I think the best thing you can do is really find a core group of people that support you, whether it's your partners in the business, whether it's your core opening team, whether it's these small business partners, your local business corridor, nonprofit organization, lastly, other small business owners who have gone through something similar or can give you advice.
Dang is excited to see that Baby's Cucina has been so busy so quickly. Now she looks forward to growing the business for the long term.
We're doing significantly better than I had initially projected, which is amazing. We get to experience the results of like really working hard over the past couple years. It's just really special.
Baby's Cucina and Market is open 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. every day except Tuesdays. For Block by Block, I'm Alicia Miranda.
A new arts and wellness center in Philadelphia is designed to empower creative entrepreneurs and build community. But its founder is also positioning the gallery as a third place, the kind of place where people can gather socially outside of work and home settings. The People's Gallery holds free and donation-based events, including weekly yoga sessions, art making, dancing, storytelling, and open mic nights every first Saturday of the month. Block by Block's Nikki Schaefer stopped by to find out more.
The People's Gallery Project is a new third place that recently opened in Philly's Washington West neighborhood. This nonprofit organization is centered around arts and wellness, with a mission to support creative entrepreneurs. Founder Aaliyah Boynton first came up with the idea while studying occupational therapy in graduate school. Two of her clients were working towards entrepreneurship and greater independence. When Aaliyah noticed their artwork sitting around, she couldn't stop thinking about how it could be shared.
So I reached out to them directly and floated the idea of, hey, what if we do an art gallery? With the concept of, with occupational therapy, we're working towards independence. We're working towards the goal of the specific individual, whatever is going to be fulfilling to them that maybe they were blocked from for some reason.
Aaliyah knew she wanted to create a community space that felt like home. That vision became reality when the People's Gallery Project opened its doors in September. The gallery unfolds into three rooms. The main space, with its high ceilings, serves as the primary exhibition area, showcasing most of the visual art. A counter in the back is where tea and snacks are often served. The middle room features rotating artwork and a corkboard filled with photos of visitors. The third room is known as the wellness room.
It actually looks a lot like my old apartment, like all the all the stuff is the same. There's twinkly lights, there's photos of the ocean, just a few photos of beach landscapes up on the walls. Other than that, there's not a lot of bright visual art, so it's actually the one space where you kind of get a little break from all the stimulation of the bright colors of the gallery, and that's on purpose. You know, no chairs that are set up permanently, just kind of some cushions, some mirrors on the walls, so it's kind of like if we were having a big event and you felt overstimulated, you could step back into that room and just feel just a little bit more calm. That's kind of the idea.
This space feels very magical and very supportive to anybody that walks into the room. And I always want to be a part of a space that is inclusive of anybody.
Graziana Zito is an occupational therapist and a yoga instructor who leads restorative yoga at the People's Gallery Project every Thursday evening.
It's very intuitive, and it's meant for everyone to start to learn and understand their own bodies and to really honor without judgment what an individual needs. So in the class, I really like to leave it up to the student to follow what they would like and leave the rest behind.
After the restorative yoga session ended, the front room of the gallery transformed into a lively tea party with jazz music and conversation. I spoke with a community member who prefers to remain anonymous. He first wandered into the gallery, mistaking it for a jazz bar. Now, he attends yoga classes regularly.
It's close to home. It seems to me that it gives you a sense of community. You can come and do certain activities other than drinking. You can come and there's always like the people running the gallery. They're always trying to accommodate different workshops.
In a world increasingly drifting towards solitude, third places have the power to foster community and connection. Ryan Wall is a student at Drexel University's Urban Strategy Program. He's been researching third places and loneliness for his graduate thesis.
I think that loneliness is something that everyone deals with at some point in their life, some more intensely than others. I think that until very recently, it was kind of swept under the rug and it wasn't really talked about and it was a little bit taboo. There are not many solutions for loneliness or ways to address the loneliness epidemic. And this is something that the United States is facing. This is something that countries around the world are facing. And I think that in the last couple of years, it's kind of come to the forefront of public health leaders' radar.
Ryan says that he believes public spaces can combat loneliness. He says it's something you can practice anytime you're in public.
Part of it involves getting out of our comfort zones personally and being open to talking to a stranger or making a comment to a performer, like something like that. So that way we're not necessarily in our own bubbles or our shells. Something that has come up a lot is that, you know, we use our phone as a crutch when we're out in public and we're a little anxious or we're bored or we don't have anything to do. And that wasn't the case 20, 30, 40 years ago. So I think that it's a bigger social challenge, but I do think that having access to a nice park or a library or a rec center or like somewhere where you can go and be around people and be open to talking to other people and building community with them, I think that that kind of is the first step to opening the door to addressing some of that.
In what many people feel is an era of social disconnection, Aaliyah says her goal with the People's Gallery Project is to create a welcoming space for community members to connect.
The biggest thing is a place for people to gather where there's not pressure to maybe drink alcohol, spend a lot of money, where people can have just a place to be creative and feel like themselves, where there's just less social pressure. Basically, the idea is to have a community center that actually feels accessible for anybody to come into.
The People's Gallery Project is just one place trying to foster connections between people in Philly. But Aaliyah says she hopes more people feel inspired to create their own third spaces.
You know, notice what actions you can take to build those things in your own life. Like if you have this craving to be around more people in person, to do things that are different. There are opportunities out there. There are spaces that you can go to. There are things that you can create. We're in this world of creators right now. Even though it's so social media influenced, there is still beauty even in that. I mean, you can really make whatever kind of group or workshop that you want to do with very little resources. And so I would just encourage anyone who has that urge to just think about ways that they could create that. There are opportunities out there. And it will change your life.
Block by Block is produced by David Hayne Menendez, Crystal Herrera, Alicia Miranda, Amy Watara, Casey Ruka, Nikki Schaefer, Rihanna Sadiq, Maurice Waters, and us,
Autumn McCann
and Sheila Lorette Emerson. Nikki Schaefer is our board operator tonight.
Brad Linder is the radio news managing editor for WPPM. Pete Liu is the radio operations manager. And Allison Durham is WPPM's radio program manager.
We'll be back in 2 weeks with a new episode of Block by Block featuring more stories about issues affecting life in the Philly region. And you can find past episodes of the show on Philly Cam's SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever else you find your podcasts.
Thanks for listening.